Bonjour, goeiedag. This is Alan Meyer for the Belgian podcast. We're in Camden Town with Lily. I guess I started planting the seed and I had an astonishing amount of enthusiasm. I mean, obviously I had inspired everyone to do it, but we still needed a venue. I'd sought out a secret venue or a secret gig to do, but it wasn't quite the same as someone making an offer to you to come and play. Well, I joined The Only Ones in 1976. They had been together for about 6 months looking for a bass player. Kind of officially joined them on August the 13th, 1976. We kind of broke up in 1980, although we ended up playing a cat and mouse game with CBS because we owed them so much money. We kind of did some gigs in 1981, but we really did finish in 1980 in the middle of an American tour, which was just seemed to be degenerating, getting worse and worse. So I left. So I went to Peter and Zena's room, the hotel room, and said, look, I've had enough. Too many drugs around the band now.
You did too many drugs?
No, I didn't. But the band,
you sold too many drugs.
The rest of the band were, you know, into heavier drugs. So
you were the dealer, huh? You can tell us that now.
Yeah, John used to always think I was the dealer. John used to always say, come on, you know, because he used to say, you're a drug dealer, aren't you? And I was like, John, where'd you get that from? Because I had a house. Because when I met the band, I'd been in Kensington Market and done pretty well in Kensington Market, so I had a house that when they all came to, they were a bit like, oh. And for about 2 years, John used to always say, come on, Alan, you're secretly a drug dealer, aren't you? And I remember even 2 years later, we were getting the ferry across to Cali, and he asked me again, just him and I said, John, I'm really not a drug dealer. Because I never really talked much about Kensington Market. As strange as it seems, at 21, 22, it felt like rock music or pop music was for kids, for teenagers. It hadn't grown up. The Stones were the same age, or a bit older, but, and I was married, already had a son. So at the age of 21, 22, I thought, right, I need to get a proper job. I was always interested in making clothes because you couldn't buy good clothes in Scotland. And I started making leather clothes, leather jackets for, you know, Marmalade, Tremolos, all these different bands. And then eventually a friend of mine said, you should get a shop in Kensington Market. It's a great place. It's creative. So I went down to Kensington Market and eventually after a few months got a shop there, a stall there. And there was two guys across from me who had a shop, Freddie and Roger.
From band Queen, there was a beginning, so they were...
Yeah, they just called themselves Queen, I think. They had just found themselves a bass player and guitarist, because it was just Freddie and Roger. So what happened was the stall got busier and busier, and Freddie and Roger's stall got quieter and quieter. Mm-hmm. So I said to Freddie, can you look after my shop for me? And then eventually his shop closed, and then I said to Freddie, well, why don't you just become my full-time assistant? And that was in 71. And so he worked there from 71. First two singles came out, and he said, "No, I'll be turning professional soon." And then Seven Seas of Rye came out in 74. But he still carried on working for me for about another 6 months. We did keep in contact. We'd go to everyone from Kensington Market would go to all the gigs. And even after I left Kensington Market, which was 75, he'd still phone me up and invite me to the Rainbow gig. And so I kept in touch for quite a long time.
And did you go to a lot of private parties with Freddie?
Yeah, not the crazy wild ones. No, that happened a bit later on. But then I did, you know, then when I came back to music again, playing with The Only Ones, we supported The Who in 1980 and saw Queen came to the LA Forum. So that's when I saw them again. And he just bought the house in Kensington and, you know, I went over to that house a few times as well. boy was a good friend. He would come to the studio with the Beatstalkers, play guitar with us, so he became, stayed a friend for a long time. And I saw him in 1980, the same time as we saw Queen. We played in LA Forum and there was a big party at Bowie's house. And I hadn't seen him for quite a few years, so I went as a kind of surprise. Because we were close mates for a while, and I took my son with me lots of places. So David was very taken by Frank. He said he was a right wee character. So, you know, he wrote a song about Frank as well. So. He came up to Kensington Market to see me, him and Angie. He just started out with Angie. And then he sort of leaned over and he said, "I haven't got any money." And I was like, I said, "You've just had a number one with Space Oddity." And I said, "Well, Freddie will give you a pair of boots. Just have a pair of boots." So you've got Freddie Mercury fitting a pair of boots to David Bowie, who can't afford them.
And when you saw Angie, you were singing, "Angie?" Or it was not funny?
No, I think he'd only just... That was the other thing, actually, because at that time my wife was a model. And David wanted my wife to speak to her agent about Angie being a model. Kind of strange that we're going to all the countries that we've been going to since we reformed, like Japan, Norway, Sweden, Tour of France. We played in Paris, but we're going to countries that we didn't go to in the 70s. 70s, it was mainly America, Britain, and Holland. And so we've been invited, so we've been to Japan twice. I suppose when we did the three albums, we felt that we never sold out. The third album was produced by Colin Thurston. Some of that was a little bit affected by the 80s as a Colin Thurston production. But the first two albums were very organic, you know, just very good sounds. And it, I guess because they've stood the test of time, the following in these other countries that we probably didn't have in the 70s, that following has grown enough for us to be visiting them and playing there. So it's a gift. As Peter always says, see the world with the only ones. It's kind of, it feels like that. It feels very privileged that the music's lasted and people hold it so dear, you know, because the venues or the places we've played have been fantastic. Great receptions, you know, really amazing receptions, you know, because they probably never thought they would ever see us. The Only Ones, because I had heard them play. I played a couple of times with them. I wasn't convinced, and then I heard a recording of Watch You Drown and Out There in the Night, and then I could really hear Peter's voice and hear the lyrics, and I just thought, this is high quality writing. This is really, you know, from the heart, really. So that was kind of what took me into The Only Ones, was Peter's writing, and which remains the you know, why we're carrying on now, because the new album is Peter's songs, and they're as strong as the older material. For The Only Ones to be back together was my desire. Unfortunately, that happened, because I couldn't really see myself joining another band to play bass. It just, I don't have that interest. It really is just the playing with Kelly and John and Peter, really. Sounded like the Beatles for a second there, didn't it?